What really gets my dick hard is...
So fucking what?
Welcome to Middle Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
And this is episode 25, where it's now Clint's turn to be interviewed a bit and go down through the rabbit hole that is his journey to see Metallica in St. Louis.
I just had to, the FOMO was too strong, so I had to get you back somehow before we go to Detroit together by doing my own show.
Yeah, and you kind of went above and beyond what I did, and we'll get into that shortly, but I can't wait to hear more about it. Clint and I have only been, informing each other of our daily lives through texting since I'm still in Europe for another month. So I'm excited, as I'm sure the listeners are, to get involved in your journey to St. Louis and how that all came to be.
And part of the reason we missed our episode this week is that I was doing that show, and part of the reason is that you're still in Europe touring. Which, where are you today?
Yeah. I'm actually in London now. I'm in London, England. Right. We just did the late show with James Corden.
Yep.
There's the carpool karaoke stuff. He's doing a week of shows, I guess, in London. So Kings did the episode today. So we filmed that and then got back to the hotel. And here we are. And I've got the rest of the night off and the next 2 days off. So, yeah. So if you guys were expecting an episode on Monday, we're sorry. Just timing worked out horribly. And at one point, I was 7 hours ahead of Clint. And my schedule didn't line up with his. But that's the first time it's happened. Hopefully, that is the last. But you never know.
I do have to say, too, a smaller part of the reason that it's been so tough to get it together is... I'm now sitting in my brand new studio. We finally moved into our new house. Yeah. Those of you who know me know that was a very long process. So I'm in what we have cleverly started to call Metal Up Your Podcast HQ2.
Yeah, HQ2, which is awesome. That's totally awesome. And hopefully you guys were following Clint on his personal Instagram, because some of his Instagram stories during this moving process were amazing.
Oh, the moving stuff. Oh, yeah, that was crazy.
You were going crazy.
I was going insane. Yeah, I did a bunch of little vignettes from the moving truck as I was slowly losing my mind. I wasn't able to do a lot of updates during the Metallica show because it was raining the whole time.
Yeah, by the way, did your phone break? Like, because the last story, the last story you posted, there was this horrible clicking noise, and I thought it was raindrops hitting your phone, but I was like, I think his phone is dying.
Oh, well, it's fine now, but it was completely soaked for about 2 hours, so maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, well, we'll get into all those little details here momentarily, but I think we're going to get through some pick contest stuff and emails.
Yep, so here's the deal with the pick contest. I made my most bold plea yet last week with Paul on the show, which, by the way, everyone loved that Paul episode. We had our friend Paul Moak on last week and talk about Bob Rock, and that, you know, our fans really dug that.
Yeah, and it's one of our best first weeks of an episode ever. I mean, we have a couple that have gone more in listens, but you guys spoke, and
the people
you want
have
Paul
spoken.
Back.
Yeah, the people That's have spoken. Right. I'm fired, and Paul is now the co-host. But so I sort of made a plea for the positive reviews. We do in this pick contest where if you leave us a positive review on iTunes, we will send you some Metal Up Your Podcast and Clint and Ethan guitar picks, which, by the way, I sent a whole shitload out today.
Nice.
But we went from about 45 reviews to like 62, I think, now. So
amazing.
Here are the names of the next winners. If you hear me say your iTunes account name, all you got to do is send an email to our email address, which is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com, and we will send you this stuff. And make sure you put pick contest in the subject, and make sure you put your address. One dude sent me his street address, but failed to write his what city and zip code. So,
well, it's probably New Jersey.
Well, I had sent it to New Jersey, just hoping it would land somewhere.
It'll find him.
So, if you don't know, we're trying to get to 100 reviews. These reviews sort of help get us on the map. They have an algorithm over at iTunes that once we hit a certain number of reviews, it makes our show more visible. So, as soon as we get to 100 reviews, I will thankfully never speak of it again. And we're at like 62 now. So, here are our weekly pick contest winners. You know what to do. Ibenhead, Nazi, Brendan St. G, Turtle Girl 1223, Will Valor, Wacky Jack 4.
Wacky Jack.
Wacky. That Jack is always wacky.
Oh, he's so wacky. Gosh.
Greg Y, B Nolan 8411, Clucky, X Kyle MO 815X.
Straight Edge.
Who cares? 739, and Hendrix the Man. Those are our weekly Pit Contest winners.
Yeah, congratulations, Pit Contest winners.
Congratulations, all you lucky, lucky people.
And I'm going to go ahead, before we get into emails, just do our normal blah, blah, blah social stuff. You can follow us on Twitter, of course, at Metal Up Your Cast, Instagram, Metal Up Your Podcast. Email us with any questions, concerns, inquiries, metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. And if you want to support the show financially, go to patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. And yeah, that's about all of that.
Woo,
let's give us some emails.
Let's see what
the people are saying.
Let's see what they're saying. All right, so our first email is from Brian. He says, Clint and Ethan, I'm a lifelong diehard Metallica fan, and I love your podcast. I've been working my way through your episodes starting at the beginning and mixing in some newer ones. For some reason, I feel there's a negative view towards Metallica fans where I feel the need to defend my fandom because of Napster, cutting their hair, not sounding like Kill 'Em All anymore. I think that's why you guys are getting such a positive reaction from fans. I love hearing the appreciation and opinions of fellow hardcore Metallica fans. Anyway, love the show. Keep the episodes and content coming.
We will.
We sure will. We're just starting now.
Yeah, starting right now. We're going to keep them coming. I feel him. There is definitely like that negativity with some fans, whether it may be they don't sound like thrash anymore, they cut their hair, whatever. But you know what? You know, there's a slice of pizza for everyone, as Clint says.
Yeah, and there's negativity. Ethan and I harbor a reasonable, fair amount of negativity for a certain album made in 2003 that shall not be named.
Yes,
but I do think the intensity of the negative stuff is heavier with the purist types, the first four purists. You know, like those dudes are a bit hotter than I am about Saint Anger.
Right, right, right.
But thanks for the email, Brian. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, appreciate it. Next email is from Nick Roller. Great episode. Love Paul's contributions. I look forward to his return to the show. Also, Computer Tennis has taken the lead as my favorite one-liner from the podcast so far.
Nice.
Yeah, speaking of Torben.
You were on fire on that episode, dude. You were killing it.
Man, well, you're welcome, or I'm sorry. like we mentioned before, we got a lot of great feedback from Paul being on the show, and he's, of course, a great friend. So I think it was no surprise that he fit right in on an episode and you know, sitting in chatting with us. And it's what we do anyways. And that's kind of how the whole podcast started. And Paul, you know, Paul was the reason that me and Clint met. So you can thank Paul for that. You can really thank Paul for the podcast, I guess.
Yeah, Paul's the originator of the podcast. If you go back, if you trace the thread far enough.
I mean, it was my idea, buddy. I mean, he introduced us. So. Let's not get too carried away.
No, let's
thanks
not.
Thanks for the email, Nick.
All right, Fred Dadima says, I just got done listening to your tribute to Chris Cornell, and it was well done. He was a great talent that passed before his time. It is indeed a sad time for music. As always, keep up the great work, and I eagerly await the next show. By the way, the guitar playing is coming along. Oh, this is the dude who got inspired from the show to buy a guitar.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
He says, by the way, the guitar playing is coming along, and every time I feel a little discouraged, your words of encouragement really help me to keep me keep me motivated. Thanks, keep up the great work. Very cool, dude.
Man, that's awesome. Yeah, please keep it up, man. I mean, that's... Clint and I can both attest to this, that, you know, I mean, music in general can be therapeutic, can be, you know, healing. And especially if you're playing an instrument and you're creating something on your own, and even if it's just you're learning new chords and you've getting them down, it's a good distraction from negative things in your life. And
it has definitely kept me out of a lot of trouble.
Agreed. Yeah. I can't encourage people enough to pick up an instrument and start learning or pick it back up or whatever.
And you know, Fred, I think Fred, if you stick with it, you'll be playing all those guitar solos from Saint Anger in no time.
I think you're correct, man.
So hold on 1 second. Give me 2 seconds here. Yep. I just played every solo on the Saint Anger record just now.
Man, that sounded great. You're improving, Clint.
Thanks, dude. Appreciate that.
All right, man. Our next email comes from John Kopp, not like John Law, COPP. Hey, guys, big fans of the show. Was turned on to it when Clint was on Podcast Rock City a couple of months ago. And I've been listening ever since. Love the show. Keep it up. Man, we've gotten a lot of crossover from Podcast Rock City because you're on their show.
Very cool. If you guys don't know what that is, that's like my favorite Kiss podcast. And a few months ago, they invited me on the show, and you can go find that at their thing. But we love that show. What's up, Joe and Jody?
Yo.
Let's see. You mentioned Johnny Law. We had a guitar tech one time who he was new, and when I got on the bus, I said, "Hey, man, what's your name?" He's like, "Well, my name's Greg, but you can call me Johnny Law."
Johnny Law.
And I thought, "Well, I'll just call you Greg."
he was probably a narc in school.
It's like, I think I'll stick with Greg, dude, if you don't mind.
Is that cool?
I don't want to say Johnny Law any more than I have to. All right. Our next email, which I did rip this from the forum. I ripped a few things from the forum, which we're not really doing much anymore, but there was some stuff that relevant to Paul that I wanted to put in the email. So this is from KBell75. He or she says, great episode. I know that you expressed concern that technical subjects like the anticipated gear episode or deeper musical analysis might be boring, but I think it's more interesting to hear from the professional industry angle that y'all can offer other than, say, tedious top 10 lists that anyone can make. And I thought was interesting because anytime we do kind of talk in the rabbit hole that way about that side of it, we actually do get a good response. And it's something that I thought was pretty boring. But in the
moment, I think it feels kind of boring, but we've been getting positive reactions from it. So, I mean, all that to say, I think it makes you and I look more forward to actually doing a gear episode one of these days.
I actually feel I'm more excited about the gear episode than I have ever been. And I feel less restrained to go down those avenues when they come up.
Yeah, totally.
So thanks for the feedback on that. That's helpful.
Yeah, that's awesome. and I think this one is also from the forums, from Geek Out. Geek Out says, might be my favorite episode, guys. Really dug the way the conversation naturally flowed in and out of Metallica land while delving into other related topics. Paul's insights as a fan, as well as a professional musician, are also pretty incredible to listen to as well. Hey, again, the people are speaking, and Paul Moak needs to come back.
You know, I just, for those of you who love that Paul episode, I've already reached out to Paul, and we want to have him on for a couple more episodes before the year's over. But yeah, he's also going to Detroit with us, and so we're going to do at least one episode, but probably more like two or three revolved around that show.
I think so. Because
we're wanting to do a show maybe on the way up, because we're doing a road trip. We're definitely doing a show at the concert, and then there's going to be a recap. So that's just a lot more Paul in y'all's lives.
I mean, you all can expect, because I'm on tour until July 9th, and that show's July 12th. So Paul is definitely coming back for however many episodes we do on the Detroit show. So look forward to that.
And by the way, Geek Out is our friend Vinny from the forum. So what's up, Vinny?
Yeah, what's up, dude?
Jerry Cody writes, Hello, gents.
Hello, gents.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard you do the Dave.
I've kind of thrown in there from time to time, but really? I don't want to.
You sort of peppered it in.
A little bit. I don't want to step on your toes.
Don't take the only thing I have that's funny about the show, please.
The only thing I have is Torben. And you've done a couple Torbens, so I at least give me a hello here and there.
Man, that's an excellent point, dude. He writes, hello, gents. I had a question about your music taste. Oh, okay. I remember this. I didn't write back to him because I was wanting to save it for the show. He says, I'm always looking for more pizza to consume. Very good. So I was wondering about what bands you two were into. I've yet to listen to Ethan's music, but look forward to hearing it. Thanks again for the podcast and letting me geek out to a band I've always loved. I feel like I'm finding them all over again, and the impersonations must continue. They are the best. Thanks, Jerry. P.S. If any of you two or both of you are ever in Portland, Oregon, parentheses, New Jersey, pizza and beer are on me.
Ooh, that's our first pizza offer.
Has no one offered us pizza yet?
No, just beer. Well, you know what?
That dude from Australia offered us pizza, remember?
Oh, he did? Okay. I think that's smart to offer us pizza, because with the amount of beer we're going to consume from all these free ones, we need to soak it up with
something. Something's got to soak it up. So let's briefly, what are some bands that you're into kind of right now, like in this moment? Not of all time, but like what are the records you're listening to other than Metallica these last few weeks?
Hardwired to Self-Destruct. Okay. I'm sorry. Other than Metallica. Yeah. Man, you know, part of me is, I don't know if it's old school or whatever, or I'm just like, I get so busy on the road, it's tough to discover new artists. I mean, I do have go-tos all the time that are on my phone when I'm listening to them on the plane, on the bus, in a hotel room, like bands like The Cardigans, Rocket from the Crypt. I love The Clash, things like that. But there is, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of them. There's a awesome two-piece band from England called Royal Blood.
Yeah, and Royal Blood really kicks ass. Cool. Yeah,
yeah. And a friend of mine, I just found out, is their production manager. So if they ever are playing near or around us, we could probably go check them out.
The seven degrees of Ethan Luck.
Yeah, 7 degrees of Ethan Luck. There's also this is, I guess, I'm actually really into this artist. It's also a friend of mine, but I'm really proud of him because he's kicking ass right now and getting a ton of attention. It's not something that I think a lot of people would expect me to listen to, because it's very like very poppy. But my friend Colin, who is in this band House of Heroes, has a solo project called Vespertine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool. He pretty much does everything on his own, from drums to guitar to singing and stuff. And it's really cool stuff, from Columbus, Ohio. He has an EP out. He's working on a record. I actually just did some drums for, he actually did a really cool pop version of Sweet Child of Mine he's recording.
Oh boy.
It's rad. I think you would back it.
Tell him Sheryl Crow already beat him to that like 15 years ago.
I know she did, but this is a cool one. I think he's going to release it as a single.
Very cool. Speaking of Vespertine, that's my favorite Bjork record.
There you go.
What
about you? What's on your radar right
man,
now?
Man, well, obviously we've all been listening to a lot of Chris Cornell and Soundgarden.
Of course, since
Chris passed away. But one record that you told me about on our Chris Cornell episode that I had not heard is his record from 2015 called Higher Truth.
And I think it was last year, 2016.
Oh, really? Okay, so yeah. Sooner than that. And
yeah.
Paul and Ethan could tell you, I've been like just texting them screenshots of these songs that I'm discovering with captions of things like, holy shit.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because it is so good and beautiful. So that's pretty much been a staple. There's this new pop dude called Borns, B-O-R-N-S.
Okay.
And it's super duper pop stuff. If we have like our true and tried metalhead dudes, they're probably not going to dig it. But it's like a it's like a male version of Lorde's first record.
Oh, very cool.
So I've been vegging on that a lot. So between Soundgarden, Chris Cornell, and that record, other than that, it's pretty much all Metallica at this point.
Yeah, totally.
When you're right, like I like that you joked about at the top. Like, dude, I've been listening to Hardwired so much.
Oh yeah, Hardwired. I've been listening to so much. It's now one of my alarms when I wake up in the morning.
Which one?
Song Hardwired. Nice. Just the intro, like right away. Yep, that's like this morning. I had to wake up at like 6:45 to go do this TV show thing, and it gets me out of bed so damn fast.
Just imagine having like your own personal James Hetfield to just rock you out of bed every morning.
I mean, that's the closest I'll get for now.
He can rock you out of bed with his hard rock, and then he'll rock you to
sleep
with his delicate side.
Yeah. Let me interject something, speaking of good music, before we move on to the next email, because just the other day I was at the Pink Pop Festival in the Netherlands with Kings, and I had basically set up soundcheck stuff early in the morning, had all day to chill. I walked around and watched a bunch of bands. But one band in particular that I couldn't go wait to see is Prophets of Rage, which if you don't know by now, it's basically Rage Against the Machine without Zach, and it's Be Real and Chuck D singing and doing Rage covers, doing Public Enemy stuff, Cypress Hill. But I saw they did this at another festival the day before, and I was really hoping they'd do it at this one, but Tom Morello got on the mic and started talking about Chris Cornell, and I was sitting side stage watching this, and they went into Like a Stone and brought out Surge from System of a Down.
Oh yeah, cool.
And he, like, his voice is very unique, and you know, like it or not, he can sing really well. And they came out and played Like a Stone, and it was just a beautiful moment in front of like 50,000 people.
Amazing.
I never thought in a million years that I would see that. And then 2 days later, I'm in an Eddie Vedder show, and he's breaking down talking about Chris Cornell literally last night.
Wow.
So incredible stuff. But so. Jerry, thank you for the question. That spawned a lot of stuff. And check out some new music. And maybe we should start putting that stuff on social media, like records we're listening to this week or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. All right. Next email is from, is it Amr? A-M-R?
Amir?
Amr? I'm going to say Amr. Amr, okay. Amr maybe. Amr Constandy. Hey, fellas. Big fan of your show since the beginning. Thanks for taking the time to put together the content each week, and thanks for the picks. Oh, nice. You left us a review. Thanks, buddy. Just wanted to share with you my new album that was released this week. The music is very much in the style of Metallica/Maiden, so I hope you enjoy. I actually checked out a couple tracks when he emailed us this.
I did, too. It's called The Masquerade, right?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. It's killer, man.
It's very like beautiful... melodic metal for sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he did a great job. But yeah, I checked out a couple tracks when I was like packing up my suitcase to go to an airport or something, and I put it on. I was like, wow, man, this is cool. Clint can probably agree with me on this, is that it's really encouraging when we have gotten whether it's through the podcast or personally, links from people that maybe are fans of what we do with their music. And it's really cool when you hear something that's like people have spent some time on and put their heart and soul into it. And this was a really good example of that, man. The guy definitely spent some time creating this stuff and did a great job.
And we've had some of you send us in like your original artwork. And like even one dude made some artwork for our show that we're going to use at some point. So we love all that stuff. Like, we've got some really talented and some really funny fans too. Like, most of the emails we get, we don't read the whole thing because we truncate it a little bit, but almost every email is pretty funny, I would say.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So thanks for sharing that with us, Amer. I'm just going to say I'm from Tennessee.
Amer
Castandy, huh? What?
Amer, it's like shooting a gun, man. You got an aimer.
You got an aimer. Okay. Jason Berry writes, hello, Clint, Ethan, and Paul. He directed this to Paul. I couldn't believe how similar all the sentiments and emotions you guys expressed during the Cornell episode, which were identical to mine. It might sound cheesy, but I view your guys' podcast as being more than a Metallica podcast. It's a collective of people who simply love and appreciate music, both popular and not, both making and consuming of music. This episode hit home with me, and I can't wait to keep listening. Thanks again, guys. Much love, Jason Berry. Very
nice,
cool.
Nice. Thank you very much.
That's nice.
Oh, yeah. All right. This one is from TJ Mower. Great show, and I really enjoyed hearing from Paul on his perspective as to what producers do and his thoughts on Bob Rock from the inside of the industry. Lots of great stuff here and that I've never thought of. I dig your show so much.
Thank you.
Very cool. Paul obviously is a very experienced songwriter, producer, engineer, mixer, all the above.
Dancer. Don't forget dancer.
That's true. That guy can Macarena like nobody else. even sitting in the same room as him, you know, he did have a lot of great things to say about Bob Rock and about just the whole process of what people don't really see. I mean, I would say even outside of the cameras rolling on something like Some Kind of Monster.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on that people don't ever get to see when people are making a record. And I thought Paul brought some good perspective on that.
He did. Thanks, TJ Mower. CRL writes, the Chris Cornell show was right on point. His death forced me to stop listening to Hardwired. I was shocked and hurt, which that's a compliment to Hardwired, by the way. I was shocked and hurt by the news, but find myself excited and saddened listening to his music. Excited about how good it is and taking the opportunity to feel all of it again, and sad that we'll not hear more of his creations. Your show's made me proud to know that there are other music lovers out there that genuinely care about the people that make the music that fuels our lives. Well done. That's a hell of a compliment.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Wow.
Thanks, dude.
That's great.
I'm really glad that the show resonates on a level other than like Metallica, Fade to Black. You know, like I'm glad that.
Yeah, totally.
which I'm totally cool with that because that's exactly how I feel like the phrases, yeah, Metallica, yeah, Fade to Black, go through my head like 35 times a day. So.
Of course, yeah. Especially when, cool. when you saw them in St. Louis and they played Fade to Black.
That's what I said during every song. Yeah, Fade to Black.
Yeah. Yeah. The song's called Enter Sandman. Yeah, Fade to Black.
Fade to Black.
here we go.
Letters from Samim.
Letters from Samim.
What does Samim have to say?
This week, Samim says, hey guys, haven't checked in with you in a while, so I wanted to say hi. I just listened to the Bob Rock episode, and it was great. But man, I don't know if I'm greedy, but it felt like it needs a part two with more focus on individual tracks on the technical side of things. I would actually agree with that. I would love to do that. Excuse me. I'm a big, big fan of the deeply layered yet never chaotic production of Load, for instance, and would love to hear more about that from a professional like Paul. You should give him, again, some time. Samim, I wholeheartedly agree with you. Not only do we want Paul back, and we will have Paul back for the road trip to Detroit, but that's a great idea. I personally would love to go back into detail about certain tracks that Bob produced.
Well, we are doing the Load episode next week.
Yeah.
So we'll do a track by track on that. I totally agree. Like, part of what's great about the Bob Rock era, but what really crystallized on Load and Reload is what Samim just called the deeply layered yet never chaotic production. Because even though there are songs that are, I get it, aren't great songs, they sound good to listen to, like, because they're so interesting sonically. So a song like Ronnie that I may not care that much about, I'll burn the whole thing down because it sounds so good.
Yeah.
That's the difference between the people who don't like Load and Reload versus the people who don't like Saint Anger. Saint Anger is so hard to listen to just purely from pure sonic points of view.
Yes, yes.
That I can hardly even tolerate what I don't think is good about the song. You know what I mean?
Well, it's hard to even give it a chance because you have to sit through it. You know, I mean.
Well, and I'll say I like the song Frantic. I think Frantic is a cool song, but it just sonically, it's exhausting to me.
Yeah, it is, definitely. Well, hey, Samim, it's always good to hear from you, my friend.
Thanks, Samim. Always good to hear from Samim, our first emailer ever.
Our very first email. It was like the morning after we released the first three episodes. I was laying in bed. I'm like, Wait, who is this? He's from Istanbul, I think.
Turkey. Yeah. Yeah,
Turkey. And I was like, this is insane. Like less than 24 hours and there's somebody in Turkey listening to us.
Do you, you know where Turkey is, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I don't even say it,
but you know where Turkey is, right?
I think everyone listening knows where Turkey
is. Okay, cool. Yeah. We don't need to say it.
Yeah.
So this is our last email and, I chose this one to be the last one because it ties into kind of this, my story about getting into this show in St. Louis on Sunday. It comes from Tom and Brendan Block, and then also Tom's future son-in-law, Patrick Fox. It says, Clint, it was fun talking to you and your friend in the lounge at Busch Stadium. We saw you guys on the Jumbotron for a few seconds before Sad But True. Hope you had a great trip to the Lou, and we will be putting up your podcast. So I'll get into why that email is relevant, but I did want to read it on the show because those dudes were super sweet.
Oh, awesome.
So,
yeah.
Are we ready to hear the saga?
These are things that I don't even know about what you just talked about, and I'm excited to hear about it.
It's cause
yes, we're ready
it's
to hear the saga.
It's because they're my best friends now, not you.
Oh, wow. This has been episode 25 with Ethan Luck.
we'll
see you next week where I have a new co-host.
Paul Moak.
Welcome to Melody Podcast. This is Ethan Luck and Paul Moak.
So here's a little backstory. So some people have asked, like, because I got these snake pit passes. So the whole deal, other than getting to see them, was that I got these really special snake pit passes. If you don't know what that is, then I don't even know why you're listening to the show. But
exactly,
It's a VIP section kind of in the middle of the catwalk that goes out. Catwalk goes out to about 20 rows. The snake pit is a little section that I think about 150 to 200 people can be in. And you can't buy these tickets. They are only acquired through a lottery system that you enter when you buy a ticket. So they're very hard to win.
And I think the day of the show, they'll actually go up into the nosebleeds and find like hardcore fans.
They give
fans
them to a few people, yeah.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I think some like A-list celebrities get snake pit for obvious reasons. But
well, I mean, you were there, so yeah, duh.
I'm a high B, maybe not an A, high B.
B plus.
So I got the tickets through a fan of our podcast. But before I get into that, I'll describe what a shitty day I was having before, just to contextualize this.
I would love to hear the preface of this book.
Because you've also saw my Instagram stories from that day, because my car broke down in the middle of nowhere in Tennessee. And I was driving out in the middle of nowhere to get something off Craigslist, because the price was so good on this.
What was it, by the way?
It's an office desk chair, this like really cool desk chair.
Oh, nice.
That was really cheap and like worth the drive. Like I was like, oh, I'll just listen to a few podcasts, have a little me time. As soon as I get off the exit, and I'm talking literally some Deliverance level middle of nowhere stuff, my car breaks down. I've come to find out it was a timing belt.
But okay, because that's encouraging. That's not too expensive.
Well, it ended up being about $1,400 because other crap happened when it went out. Yeah, things I don't understand.
Ah, okay. Jeez.
So I'm in the middle of nowhere. It's too far away to really call any of my buds to come help me out. And it's, by the way, it's hot as shit. And
yeah,
my car's AC only works when I'm driving. So
I would have flown back from Europe to help you. You should have called me.
Ethan, I need you to come back for about 3 hours and just help me get back to Nashville.
Cool. I'm in Poland right now, but I'll be there tomorrow.
Well, good thing that's still in the States. You know where it is. Okay, so
of course.
So I call a tow truck. Well, the tow truck takes 90 minutes, and so I'm in the car. So then I have to ride with the tow truck guy to this town called Murfreesboro that's about 40 minutes outside of Nashville. And, dude, it was like straight out of a movie. He's like saying things to me like, well, if you want, I can just have my daddy fix it. If you want to go to my house, my daddy will have you up and running in 4 hours.
You can spend the night.
I'm like, dude, no offense, but I do not want to go to your dad's house right now.
You don't want to go to Papa's house?
I was like, I'm sure your dad's a great mechanic. I just wanted to take it somewhere. And then he's like, I was like, yeah, I'm going to have to get an Uber back to Nashville. He's like, well, I can have my aunt and my wife take you now. They're out shopping, but we'll go to my house and when they get home. I was like, dude, I don't want to go to your house.
He wanted to have you over for dinner so bad.
Yeah, he wanted to wear my skin. He wanted to kill me.
He probably wanted you for dinner.
They're definitely some sort of backwoods cannibal tow truck family, for sure. There's no question. So he finally gets me the mechanic, drops me off, and I'm not trying to slag him. He was a sweet dude, and he helped me in my time of need. I paid for it, but he helped me. burn the mechanic, pull shit down. Then I'd call an Uber, which Murfreesboro to Nashville is about 40 minutes. So I'm in the longest Uber ride ever. And the guy's definitely wanting to do some chit-chat. And I'm not big on the old Uber chit-chat, but we're chit-chatting. We finally get about 10 miles from my house, and we get in sort of a massive wreck. We were like severely rear-ended on the interstate.
Jeez.
Everyone was totally okay, but all I could think about was like, how do I get home? Like, I don't want to wait for the police. So I called another Uber from the crash site to get home. And so that's the context of when I get home. And my wife and I just moved in this new house, and there are stuffs everywhere. And I'm dealing with a pod being dropped and a moving truck and all this stuff. So I get an email from a fan of ours named Brad Blazik, who's written into the show before.
From Paris, Tennessee.
From Paris, Tennessee, New Jersey. And he has won... I have not let that joke die. I will
By the
never,
way,
ever
I,
let it die.
I love your parentheses tone of voice. He's from Paris, Tennessee, New Jersey.
I'm glad that came through.
Like, for instance, I'm in London, England, New Jersey. It's like, do you remember that old sketch on Saturday Night Live? I believe it was
Mr. Subliminal.
It was Kevin Nealon.
Kevin Nealon. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, those are great.
So I get an email from Brad saying, "Hey, I've just won Snake Pit passes." Which is amazing because it's so, I mean, there are people who enter these contests every time Metallica tours. There are even some really crazy people who go to like 10 shows a year and still don't win this thing. So he's saying, "Hey, I want them for St. Louis this Sunday. If you can get to St. Louis, and it's yours."
So he was Brad planning on going alone?
Yeah. Well, I think what he would have ended up doing, he was planning on going to the show alone. But I think what he was, because you win two Snake Pit passes, so I think he would have ended up giving them to someone on the forum. I mean, you know, the Metallica community is pretty tight-knit and pretty cool. So,
of course, yeah.
He would have given them to someone, but it's so cool that he thought of us.
How generous, man. Brad, good on you, man.
Dude, yeah, I'll get into that. I mean, he basically made my Metallica dreams come true. So I'm immediately talking with my wife about the logistics of, like, is this going to work? So I'm on the road that weekend. And I look, and we're coming home Saturday night on a bus you drive through the night, and I realize we're going straight through St. Louis.
Amazing.
So I'm calling our tour manager. I'm calling, like, we're looking at flights, or am I going to rent a car back? But because Brad lives in Paris, Tennessee, which isn't far from Nashville, he was like, "Dude, I can take you back home on Monday, but if you can get to St. Louis, it's yours." So
wow.
I bought the cheapest ticket I could, because you have to have a ticket to use a Snake Pit pass.
You can't just walk up with a Snake Pit pass on your wrist and be like, "Let me in."
Nope, you have to have a ticket to get in the gate. So I bought the cheapest one I could, which was still $90 after fees. But dude, it was like in nosebleeds. So,
but I mean, think you spent $90 on a ticket, but you were in the fucking Snake Pit.
Oh my god, dude! Well, and it gets even better, because not only were we in the Snake Pit, we were one of the first three people in the Snake Pit.
Yeah, you sent me a text. Before your phone started getting soaking wet, and it's just a picture of anyone that's in there. I think it was just you and Brad, and like I saw two other dudes just kind of hanging out.
So I meet Brad. So the bus drops me at noon in St. Louis, and Brad and his daughter and his daughter's boyfriend, all sweet people, all now friends of mine. But
do they all drive together?
They came together because his daughter and his daughter's boyfriend just wanted to hang out in St. Louis and go to the zoo and stuff. So they drove, and it was just me and Brad. So I meet them there. First time, it was my first time meeting them. I mean, we, on both sides of the equation, we both really like rolled the dice on each other not being insane.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. Like we get emails from people, and everyone's always been super cool and respectful and funny and this and that. But you never know. You might be encountering, you know, like the tow truck driver taking to Murfreesboro, you know?
Who wanted to, again, I reiterate, and this is not, I'm not guessing. I know for a fact. He wanted to wear my skin.
He wanted to take it to Pawpaw's house.
he wanted to put me in a hole in his basement. I'm telling you.
It is definitely a gamble. Let me ask you this. How did your wife feel about you going to the show? I mean, I'm not going to the show, but like hitching a ride home with a stranger.
She trusted my instinct about it.
Yeah,
I honestly, after talking to Brad for a bit, I'm pretty sure his wife was more worried about me than my wife was about him.
She's like, "Hey, honey, I've heard you listen to this podcast, and those guys definitely are a little, you know, they're a little creepy, and I don't think you should be in the same vehicle with them."
So we got lucky because at our show they did a pop-up store, which they I don't think they do it at every show. They sort of find a block and it was really cool. Like, it's not just a little tent. They actually put hardwired artwork on the windows. It looked like a real store. And then you go in there and they're just selling a ton of cool stuff that you can't buy at the normal merch
booth. Gosh. I hope there's one in Detroit.
I do. So here's the problem is the coolest stuff in there is so expensive. Like, I wanted to get this Kill 'Em All baseball tee, and Ethan had asked me to get him the Shortest Straw shirt. I almost got to the register before I even looked at the price tag. $150 each.
Now, okay, let me ask you this. Could you at any point tell when you looked at this, you know, like the Shortest Straw shirt that I wanted?
Yeah.
At any point were you like, oh man, this has got to be $150 or at least really expensive. I mean, is it just a t-shirt?
Nope, and I'll tell you why.
Because, like a gold tag on it or something?
Nope, because they look super distressed and fucked up. It's like anything, like you pay extra for how messed up they look, you know?
So it's almost like you feel like you're buying like a vintage t-shirt?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, and it's like special artwork and it's a limited run. I mean, I get it. It sucks. Like, I immediately put them back on the rack.
When you texted me that, hey man, sorry, it's not going to happen. It's $150. I immediately went online and was like, Metallica Shortest Straw t-shirt. And I clicked on it. It was like Amazon $19.99. I was like, oh, I'll get that one.
I mean, they looked pretty cool and pretty comfortable, but
sure, of course.
I can't rock that. So I did buy the Webster Hall vinyl, which I think is the only way you can buy that vinyl right now.
Which is awesome. That's great.
And I listened to it yesterday while I was putting my house together, and Greg Fiddleman produced it and mixed
it. That's our boy, man.
And it sounds incredible. You all know how we feel about Greg. And I mean, proof's in the pudding. Go listen to that record. It's one of the best-sounding live records I've ever heard. So we go to the pop-up store. We burn that down. Brad had bought the Whiplash Experience. So he was
nice.
He was anxious to get to the venue because you check in for all the experiences, you check in at 1:30 and then you go in to do whatever various experience you have at 2:30.
So let me quickly rewind you. I don't think you mentioned it. Where did you meet up with Brad? At the pop-up store?
We met up because my tour bus was dropping me. So they wanted to drop me at kind of a convenient place because it was kind of out of the way for those dudes. So instead of going like way into St. Louis, they dropped me at a Love's, which Love's is like a big gas station.
Truck stop, yeah.
It's like a truck stop. So they just dropped me there, and Brad very graciously was accommodating and met me there. So then I was just in the car with them. And then so his daughter and her boyfriend had the car to go do their St. Louis adventure. So they just dropped us at the pop-up store, and then we Ubered to the stadium.
Oh, dude, that's so cool. You guys are best friends.
I mean, it did feel like it was like our Metallica day, dude. It was like our Metallica adventure.
Oh, man. Well, I feel. I hope it doesn't ruin our adventure together. Brad, let me talk to you personally, buddy. If you ruin my date with Clint to Detroit, we're gonna have a problem. I'm gonna drive all the way to Paris, Tennessee with Pawpaw.
Me and Brad have our own Metallica podcast now.
Oh, do you? Do you have a handshake too?
Handshake,
you got a cool little handshake.
Handshake, matching long underwear.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we're in deep.
All right, we'll continue on about Brad.
So we get to the stadium, we get our passes, and like until I had that snake pit pass on my arm, I was so nervous all day that it like somehow wasn't going to happen. You know, like when something you're really anticipating is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
There's something in you that's like, this isn't going to happen. There's no way. This isn't real.
For sure.
Something's going to come up, and they're going to just say, what's your name, Clint Wells? No snake pit for you. Uh-uh.
I felt the same way at the Philadelphia show when I walked up to the will call booth and I was like, Ethan Luck, here's my ID. And she actually looked in like three different locations. I'm like, oh God, they blew it. And then she comes back. She's like, here you go. And I was like, fuck yeah, I got it.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like I was like, my arm was shaking when I put the snake pit pass on. And so I got my ticket as well in my pocket.
Did Brad have to put it on for you?
He did. He actually did. And I put his on him too.
God, you guys are the cutest.
So then he had to split to go do his experience, and so I went to a bar right next door, and a lot of people on the forum were at this show, and so we were all like kind of not texting but talking on the forum, and a few Instagram folks were just trying to like coordinate, and I actually thought I was going to be able to meet several of our listeners, but I didn't really end up seeing anyone. I know, you know the guy has written in before named Darth Leviosa?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, somebody else had posted for him or on his behalf saying, hey, Darth is a big fan of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Dina did. And they actually texted me during the show, because at one point during the show, me and Brad were on the Jumbotron. So they...
Amazing.
She texted me like, oh my God, you were just on the Jumbotron. I think Kevin Van Damme was there. So probably five or six people that we are loosely connected with through the show.
That's great, man.
I did not get to see any of them.
I think it'll be a lot easier to meet some of our podcast listeners at the Detroit show if there are some going.
I think so.
Because we're going to be planted out in the parking lot doing an episode. So,
and we're going to have all of our swag. Like, people will know it's us. Like, I wasn't wearing anything that would indicate that I was from the show, and I definitely wasn't really talking about it because I'm saving it for Detroit. I told a few people about it. So here's where the story starts to get a little interesting. So the gates for normal people like me open at 4. So Brad's already in there doing Whiplash Experience, which Whiplash is when you get early entry to GA, you get a lithograph, and you get to go to the Spit Out the Bone Buffet, and you get the Memory Remains Museum.
Very cool.
So he's in there doing all that cool stuff. You get it, like a free drink and like a little cocktail lounge and all this stuff. So I go to get in line for doors at 3:30, and it starts downpouring rain.
Oh man.
And I didn't have a poncho or an umbrella. Like, I'm just enduring it, right? Like, metal horns in the air, like, this is for Metallica. Well, about 40 minutes of that, and I was like, this sucks.
Fucking Brad is dry right now.
I got out of the line and thought, I have snake pit, I don't care anymore, and just went like under this little pavilion, and just was, it was the coldest, wettest I've ever been in my life. It was truly miserable. My ticket,
it was like a sad point in a John Cusack movie.
Yeah, it was like High Fidelity, like when he's in the rain. And I was so wet that when I pulled my ticket out of my pocket, it almost fell apart.
Oh no.
So I was so worried that they wouldn't be able to scan it, like just creating this, you know, scenario in my head where I basically can never see Metallica again. Like, you've been banished from Metallica because you're too wet. They finally opened doors 30 minutes late. So from 3:30 to 4:30, I was basically in rain.
Yeah, wow.
I get in, and I thought they'd already released all the VIPs to the GA field. So I'm asking this lady, like, hey, how do I get to the field? How do I get to the field? I just need to get to the field. And she's like, go through there. I go through these doors, and this lady stops me. And she's like, hey, I don't think you have the wristband you need to be in here. And I said, well, I have the snake pit pass, and I showed it to her. And I said, I just need to get to the field. Is this the way to the field? And she's like, look, I don't know what snake pit is. Just go that way. If you're not supposed to be in there, someone will tell you. I walk in and I realize I'm now in the VIP. Like, I look to my right and there's the Memory Remains Museum.
Really?
I look to my left and there's the Spit Out the Bone Buffet.
Ooh, nice work, Clint.
There's some girl like drinking wine. And she's like, what are you doing? And she's like, are you supposed to be in here? And I was like, I don't think so.
You told her the truth?
Yeah. Well, she didn't look official. She looked like a fan.
Oh, okay. And so she's probably like, shit, awesome. You're like, where's Brad?
Well, I actually said to her, I was like, hey, I know you actually paid for this. I'm sorry that I'm in here now for free.
What if you went to the Hardwired Experience and like the band was right there and you just got in line to meet him?
I just randomly walk in some room and it's James Hetfield's there. I'm like, hey, man.
He's like changing for the show, put his battle jacket on. And you're like, I got the Hetfield Experience. It was 10 grand.
Yeah, man, I'd get to like help you put your pants on and stuff. Here, right leg first, right leg first.
There you go. Good job, buddy.
It was in that VIP lounge where I met the people who sent me the email earlier, Tom and Brendan Block, real sweet family who had the Whiplash Experience. So Brad was elsewhere and I didn't know where to stand. I didn't know how to blend in. So I ended up just standing at a table that they were already at. And they, like most Metallica fans, they very graciously sort of let me hang, and we exchanged our stories and all that cool stuff. Are you still there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm here.
You're just drinking. I can hear you drinking.
Well, I'm just, dude, right now I'm like enjoying the ride. I'm just getting a good story from Clint, refilling my drink.
I'm worried suddenly that it's been boring. Is everything cool?
Dude, not at all. Everything's totally cool. I'm just honestly,
I'm gonna edit out the last 20 minutes of this. No big deal.
No, not at all. No, this is like a really good book on tape.
So they finally decide that the weather is okay, because the reason they hadn't let anyone onto the field yet is because it was lightning. So even though it was still kind of raining-y, they let us all out. Rainin'y. So of course, we're within the maybe the first 50 people they let onto the field. So some people are kind of running to get a rail spot. We're walking to the end of the rail where you go through this gate to get into the snake pit. And dude, the whole time me and Brad are looking at each other like, this is so surreal. I can't believe this is about to happen.
Wow.
And we walk into the snake pit and there's only one other dude in there.
Awesome. And that did dude, you immediately high five him?
No, I felt primal. Like I felt like,
who the fuck are you?
Like don't get my spot, motherfucker. You know,
how did you get in here?
He got in because he was like, actually had like a walker. So he probably got like special insurance because he had,
Man, well, that's cool.
I feel bad that I was feeling so like territorial towards a guy with a walker, but I was.
Oh man, that
turns out he was harmless. Asshole. I know.
Turns out he was harmless. Oh, really?
So,
a fellow Metallica fan was just there to share the joy of Metallica with you, and he was harmless.
I know. But, oh, dude, man, you got to understand, we were just so amped. So, we basically just walked up to the front rail right in front of James as if we did not belong there, and we're looking around like, I looked at the security guard that was right in front of me on the other side of the rail, and I was like, can we stand here? Is this like open? And you know how secure, like, she didn't care about me. She was like, yeah, if you want to, like, sure, do whatever you want. So we just, we posted up right there, and that is where we were, directly in front of James. There was, I mean, we're talking 5 feet from James.
Wow. Dude, that's amazing.
So.
I'm so jealous already.
Dude, I mean, it really did feel like kind of like once in a lifetime type stuff. Because the deal is, when you were facing the stage, it looked like you were at a big show, but up front. But when you looked behind you, it's 50,000 people.
Oh, yeah, totally. There's a lot of people there.
So what we realize is, like, this is literally probably the most coveted place to be in this entire stadium.
That's crazy, dude.
So the first band that played was, and it's kind of drizzling. It's not, like, full-on raining, but it's definitely raining. Like, we were wet. If I pulled my phone out for, like, 5 seconds to text you or Paul or to, like, try to take a video or something, my phone was wet. So that kind of kept, the good part of that is it kind of kept my phone in my pocket the whole time. I didn't really waste a lot of time looking at my phone.
Which is hard. I mean, it's hard to do. If I mean, like, you saw how many photos and videos I took at my show. And honestly, a lot of it was for content for this podcast to send to you and Paul and a bunch of other friends that love Metallica.
Right.
But I, you know, I don't know about you, but I was definitely like very like self-conscious about it every time I held it up, even though I looked in front of me and there's a million phones out. But I hate that about shows. I hate looking forward and seeing all these screens. But I also want like maybe a memory or two from the show. Yep. And
I got about 10 throughout the whole day. But, you know, Brad was taking a lot too. And I just figured he's got the exact same vantage point I do. So a lot of the best photos that I have in terms of memories, I got from Brad. But
cool.
So it's still raining. So a band called Local H opened. They had a big song like in the early aughts, I think. Do you remember that band?
I remember Local H. Did Local H to didn't do Copacetic, right?
Yeah, that's them.
Yeah, Copacetic, yeah.
That song is called something else, but that's the song, is Copacetic.
Yeah.
It's just
So they replaced Avenged Sevenfold?
They didn't replace them. I think that for whatever reason, they were doing a contest where they let fans vote who they want to open. So I'm guessing Avenged just couldn't do it. They had a scheduling conflict, so they turned it into this like vote for whatever. So people voted for Local H.
Wow, crazy. And then that's cool. Really, I mean, Local H has been around since the 90s.
Like, they've been around a long time. And they were really good. It's just two dudes. It's a guitar player, singer, and a drummer. But the guitar player has this really weird pickup just on his top three strings. And he runs half of his rig through a big-ass 8x10 bass amp. So
that's awesome.
It sounded really heavy. And the songs were really good. Like, I walked away from that thinking, like, I could buy some of these records and be into it.
I mean, was the crowd into it?
Not really. But, you know, first of three on a stadium show, as you know, people are trickling in. There weren't a lot of people there. And I think cool they were kind of bummed from Metallica. About it, you know? And because it was raining,
if Metallica said, hey, you want to open for us with an acoustic guitar, I'd be like, fuck yes, I do.
Oh, yeah. They're like, well, no one's going to pay attention or care. I'm like, well, I'm still doing it.
Don't care, because guess what? I get to watch Metallica from the side of the stage.
Right. So they played, and I felt bad for the dude because his gear started messing up because of the rain towards the end of their set. His amp kind of started to crap out.
Ah, man, that sucks. Hey, man, there's a thing called Visqueen. You put it over your amp.
Well, there you go. They should have called
black or clear tarping. I'm telling you, I deal with this shit at festivals all the time when it starts raining.
They should have called you.
Should have called me, man. I could have gotten in the show for free and tech for them and watched Metallica with you.
So they were good. Like, and when you asked if the crowd liked them, my only real barometer for it would be the people in the pit. And surprisingly, until Metallica, there were not a ton of people in the pit. I mean, we're talking maybe 40, which really surprised me.
You would think anyone with pit passes would be down there ASAP getting a rail spot.
I know. It bewilders me. I didn't really talk to many of the people in the pit except for those like right around me on the rail. But the pit liked them. Like at one point, he's like, "You guys still out there?" And someone yelled like, "The pit loves you." It was fun.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome.
So they get done. Volbeat comes on, which Volbeat's not really my thing, but they were really, really good. And
yeah, they're a very tight band.
And they were very charming, and I totally get why people like them. And a lot of people in the pit were big Volbeat fans. They were singing every word.
Oh, that's cool.
So I've got a lot of respect for that. So check this out. So I had been limiting my liquid intake because I was worried about having to pee during the show and losing my rail spot.
And also, I'll have everyone listening know that when Clint was texting me and Paul about this before the show even happened, I think I texted Clint like, "Dude, like, buy a Gatorade. Like, the hole at the top is a good size. You can pee in there without spilling, and you'll be good to go." That's an old like tour trick when you're in the van and trailer and you got a long drive.
Right.
Clint declined.
Well, yeah, I was seriously considering just peeing my pants because...
Well, it was raining.
Because I was already wet. But when once I got there and kind of realized everyone in the pit was very cool and very respectful of the fact that me and Brad had gotten there first. The lady next to me had to pee and I held her spot. She promised to hold mine. All that fun stuff. While Brad went to the restroom, some other lady like wanted to lean on the rail while he was gone and I gave her my real spot when I had to go, all that stuff. So it was very,
very cool.
Very cool. Family vibe. And so I'm walking through GA to start going to the bathrooms and I feel someone swiftly walk up right next to me to my left. And I look over and it's the tuning room dude. Like, you know, the engineer that's always in the tuning room.
Yeah, totally.
It was that dude.
He's like he walked up to talk to you or just happened
no,
to walk
no, no.
up
next We were both just walking the same direction and he like came up behind me and I go, which his name is Russell, but I go, "Tuning room guy."
You said tuning room guy.
I said, "Hey,
let me explain something real quick, Clint. I wish you would have said Russell, because one of my biggest pet peeves as a crew guy working for a big band is when I'm like packing up the stage and someone goes, "Hey, crew guy," or "Hey, guitar tech, give me a fucking set list." And you're like, "Well, fuck you. No, I'm not going to give you a set list and you call me that."
Well, I wasn't trying to get anything from him. And if anything, he came into my personal space.
Okay, so it's his fault.
And I also, I didn't know his name was Russell until I got back to the pit and I was telling the story and they were like, "Oh, that's Russell." I was like, "Oh, shit, I called him the tuning room guy." But I go, "Tuning room guy." And he had ears in, so he took one ear out. He's like, "What?" And I was like, "Hey, you're the tuning room guy." He goes, "Yep." He's like, "I'm actually on my way to the tuning room right now," because it was in the back of the stadium. And I pat him on the back. I said, "Man, good luck, you know, like have fun." And he was like, "Thanks, man." And it's just funny, like, you know, you're in really
Can I
deep.
Come?
You know, you're in deep with a band when like you get excited to see the tuning room guy.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, I came back to the pit like a celebrity. I was like, "Yeah, no big deal. Just talk to the tuning room guy for a little bit."
Yeah, just met Russell. No big deal. NBD, guys.
Yeah, anyway, I patted his back. Anyway, we're pretty tight, so.
So you can tell your friends that the guy stood next to you in the pit met the guy, does the tuning room. No big deal.
So I get back, Volbeat finishes up. They were great. Very much love and respect to Volbeat. They did a great job. So we're all getting pumped. We've been standing in rain forever. And they flash on the tuning room, like, you know, they put the tuning room link on the screen, right?
Yeah, and so they show you little teasers of it and stuff.
So while they're doing that, and this was actually pretty odd, because it's drizzling still, they bring out all this like this big white apparatus, but it's all in pieces, and they start assembling it. They start assembling it on stage, and everyone's like, "What the hell is that?" We had no idea what it was, and it was this kind of shell that went over the entire kit.
And I saw a photo of this on their Instagram.
Right. So what you saw was it raised back, so it just covers the drums. But when they were building it, they assembled it like an igloo around the whole kit. And we were like, "What the heck?" We were like, "Is this some sort of Tommy Lee thing? Is he going to like come out in the crowd?" And Then they
Lawrence
brought,
has a roller coaster?
Then they brought out this clear tarp, and everyone in the pit thought that they were going to put the tarp over the entire drum kit. And we were like, we can't see Lars. And everyone in the pit was so bummed. And then,
they're not going to do that.
Well, we didn't know. Like, we just didn't know what was going to happen. It wasn't clear at the time they were going to raise it up. So there was this dude next to Brad, this Venezuelan dude, who brought one of those like Venezuelan flags. It was like his 32nd show. This dude is a huge bitchin' man. So we're like all talking amongst ourselves, like, what is this thing? And we were like, is Lars really that afraid of getting wet? And that Venezuelan guy goes, Lars is a piece of shit.
Seriously?
He was like so mad. He was like, what a piece of shit. I've been standing in the rain all day. He can't get wet.
Well, okay. Again, let me go back to me as a guitar tech working for a band. I can tell you right now that it probably wasn't as much Lars wanting to get wet as it was, his drums getting soaked, and all the microphones on his drums getting soaked and crapping out. Right. And guess what? You don't have drums after that.
Right.
You have to cover that shit up.
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, he was mostly joking, but he was coming in pretty hot on that. Like, he jumped straight to that.
Yeah, kind of hot. He had that thing in the fucking chamber.
So it was actually a really funny moment when they finally did assemble it, and when they raised it up, everyone like went crazy because it looked so cool, and we were all so relieved that we were going to be able to see Lars, you know?
It honestly looked like a really cool awning kind of thing that you would sit underneath in a hammock at a resort. Yeah.
And the thing is, the crew, you could tell it was their first time building it because they were really struggling to build it. It caused a delay in the show.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it took about 20 minutes, maybe even more. Now, here's the kicker. Because Metallica had extra time in the tuning room, which I didn't tune into the tuning room thing because the Wi-Fi was shit and like I didn't have headphones, I wouldn't have been able to hear it. But I found out later, dude, in the tuning room that night, right before they came on stage, they played Spit Out the Bone, Through the Never, Here Comes Revenge.
What?
And they played Ain't My Bitch.
Really?
So if I had heard that in the tuning room, I would have spent the whole show titillated that they were going to rock Ain't My Bitch, which they ended up not doing.
Yeah, but still, I mean, if they're doing that in the tuning room, I mean, they're definitely like, they're rehearsing it.
Yeah, and the Spit Out the Bone, it's the second time they've done that in the tuning room, and it sounded even better. So they're definitely...
Because the first time, like, you can tell Hetfield like wasn't going full bore with the vocals, and they were kind of having fun with it, but... Dude, that's awesome. I got to get in line and watch that tuning room footage.
Well, when they play Here Comes Revenge, Lars even says into the mic, we should just do all of the songs from Hardwired in Europe. He actually says that. I'm like,
That's what he said in the tuning room?
Yeah.
Wow, and then, that's
and then
really
when,
cool.
When they're playing Ain't My Bitch, like they kind of struggle through it because they haven't played that song in like 18 years. Lars goes, we should just replace Sandman with Ain't My Bitch and just end the whole show like that.
Sandman with Ain't My Bitch.
So... Tuning room, blah, 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 that happens. They finally get the thing assembled for Lars. They start playing the AC/DC tune, but all the lights are still on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they did this for your show, but during the changeover from Volbeat or whatever, from the last band to Metallica, they had the brightest lights on possible in the stadium. It was like bright white.
It was pretty bright in Philadelphia.
So that when the lights did go down for Ecstasy of Gold, it just felt... It was just so powerful feeling.
It's more of a dramatic effect. You know, you're to your senses, you know, you got these bright ass lights and when those things go out, all of a sudden it's like your eyes have to really adjust, you know, and it just instantly like heightens your you know, excitement for the show, and you know what the intro song is going to be because they've been doing it forever. I love that they did that.
And one thing I forgot to mention is in between Local H and Volbeat, and then in between Volbeat and Metallica, our friend who listens to the show, Matt, who does pyro for Metallica, came out and said hi.
Oh, okay. So we haven't talked about this. You guys ended up meeting up.
We did meet up. He came out twice to say hi.
Awesome.
And I was asking him a lot of logistics about what his role with the band and how the pyro works. And it was really good stuff. Like, I think we need to do an episode with him to just sort of...
I would love to,
He said he'd be willing to be on the show, so...
Matt, if you're listening to this episode, which I know you are, we're going to start bugging you about being on the show.
Dude, he came up to say hi after the show, too. So I talked to Matt 3 times.
Awesome.
And at the end of the show, he was like soaking wet, like someone just dropped a bucket of water on him. And I was like, damn, dude. I was like, did you just get hit with a hose or something? He was like, dude, this is all sweat. because he was so close to some of the flames. He was like, dude, it's hot out there. And he was wringing sweat out of his gloves.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Well, I mean, you've gone to the show now. Like, when those flames at the very top of the trusses, at the top of the stage go off.
Unbelievable.
I could feel it out by front of house by Big Mick, and you're right down in front, even closer than I was.
Well, they didn't do the dancing light thing during Moth because everything got soaked.
Ah, shoot.
So the only pyro we did get to see were the ones at the top, but dude, you could feel it, definitely feel the heat from it, for sure.
Oh, and the entire stadium, for sure. I guarantee people in the nosebleeds felt that.
It's unbelievable. It was so cool.
Yeah.
All right, so...
Side little mental note, let's bring ponchos to Detroit just in case.
Yeah, for sure.
I also have two waterproof bags for phones that I use when I go out down to the river in Nashville. I'll bring those too, just in case.
Yeah, and I will say, if it's raining, you need that, because even my phone being in my back pocket wasn't enough to protect it, because I was completely soaking wet. Like, my back pocket was soaking wet. So
okay, got it.
I was pretty worried about my phone. I thought my phone was gonna like be done.
Yeah.
So. XTC of Gold comes on, and you know, of course, that's when every Metallica fan knows that shit's about to go down. Mm-hmm. Very surreal. You talked about it at your show, like you held your buddy's arm, you know, like,
oh god, it's so exciting.
At one point, Brad was like, "Hey man, I don't want to sound weird or anything, but I may cry."
Hey, dude, I'm with you, Brad.
I was like, dude, there's no judgment there. No judgment.
I've got a shoulder. I got two shoulders for you right here.
And it was cool to share that with Brad, because it's been 17 years since I've seen Metallica, but it was Brad's first show.
That was his first show?
And Brad's a huge, huge music fan. Like
That's awesome.
He's a big Pearl Jam fan. He's seen Pearl Jam, like, I think 8 or 10 times. He loves live music. He's in real deep with music.
I think it was actually Brad. I have to double check the email, but I'm pretty sure it was Brad that was at the Lexington show that I was for Pearl Jam.
We talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome.
He travels to see bands. He says he doesn't know why he never got to see Metallica, but it finally happened, and he got Snake Pit. So it was really special for him.
What a great first experience.
Well, it's all downhill from there. That's the thing.
Totally.
So it was special to be with him. Like, we were just like little kids all fucking day. So awesome. The Hardwire intro starts. We, for the first time all day, we get to see what these screens are capable of. And
they're incredible.
They're incredible. And so the band comes out, and it was the only moment of the show that I kind of got close to teary-eyed. Like, I got a little verklempt, because James walked right up to his mic and was just playing the intro with his eyes closed. And just being that close to James, the song was so loud and powerful, and he looked so intense. Like, he looked like he believed every second of what he was doing.
He does.
And so,
you know?
And so it was just monster chills, and then a little tear, like a little lump in the throat, tears right behind the eyes. And then it kind of passed, and I was just on the ride with him. We were singing the first verse and screaming.
Oh, man.
So they play Hardwired, which I guess they're not going to not open with Hardwired for the next 2 years, probably.
I mean, I'll say it's as good an opener as Creeping Death you know.
It was good, dude. Everyone went crazy for that chorus. It's a real aggressive, cool chorus.
Oh, of course.
And they all mostly stayed in their positions for Hardwire, which I was grateful for. Because once they started moving, they were always moving.
Oh, yeah. They move a lot. Yeah. And Hetfield would sing on all the different mics. So so for Hardwired, he was right in front of you and Brad.
Yeah. He pretty much stayed. That was when I had maybe three eye contact moments with James, because I was literally right on the rail right in front of him, and my first one was during Hardwired, so that meant a lot. It sounds so cheesy to say, but you're all Metallica fans, you get it. Then they go right into Atlas, which, as you know, they're playing that song so well. It was great.
Very well. Yeah,
he did the thing before Bells, "We Don't Care Where You Come From or What Religion You Practice or What You Eat,"
which I think is great. Yeah.
It's super cool. Like, people would talk about how it's scripted. Well, of course it's scripted. He's talking to a new group of 50,000 people every night.
Exactly, yeah.
What do you want him to do? You want him to wing it in front of 50,000 people?
We don't care if you eat burritos every day. We don't care if you eat spaghetti every day. Like, he can't change it. Come on.
I wasn't thinking, like, wing. I was thinking, like, yeah, we don't care. Burritos. We don't care if you're lactose intolerant. We don't care.
We don't care if you're gluten-free. We don't care if you're vegan.
So then they do Bells, which, you know, Bells you know how I feel about that song. It's one of my favorites of all time.
Oh, gosh. And the way that Hetfield intros, after he does his little speech, and he goes, "For whom the bell?" And it just, Lars counts it off, and it's like
it was a monster.
Big bell on the screen. Oh, man.
It was a monster. And, of course, it was, you know, I'd never seen Rob live. This is my first time, because when I saw Metallica in 2000, our boy Newstead was in the band. So it was my first time seeing the crab walk up close and personal in the flesh. And you know,
you saw the crab walk on the beach. You were right there.
And Kirk kind of does it with him, but Kirk's side of it, Kirk trying to do a crab walk made me actually appreciate Rob's crab walk, which I hate.
Okay.
So they play bells and it kills. They're all starting to move around. James made some joke. Oh, like as soon as they finish bells, he goes, "Oh, one more thing. Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire." And we got Fuel.
Yeah, I saw that. I looked at the set list and saw you got Fuel. That's amazing.
And it's out of the four that they've been rotating for that, Creeping. What have they been rotating? Creeping Death, Fuel.
I got Creeping Death.
You got Creep, but they've been doing two other ones too. Damn, I can't believe I can't remember what those were. But anyway, we got Fuel. I was kind of hoping for Creeping Death, but I've already seen Creeping Death. And the stuff they put on the screens for Fuel is really bitchin', really cool.
Awesome.
And they murdered the song. And everyone in the crowd went crazy for Fuel, by the way. For all you...
You know, like, for all the Load Reload haters out there, Fuel is a fucking great song, especially live.
And wait till they start doing Memory Remains, you know?
By the way, it sounds like you're drinking out of a canteen right now.
I'm drinking out of a canteen. I'm drinking out of a mule cup. I'm drinking a mimosa out of a mule cup.
Oh, nice.
Keeping it classy over here.
You have to. In the middle of your podcast, HQ, too.
And again, I feel like I'm doing like too much talking. I'm self-conscious about it.
Hey, it's me. It's Ethan. You're fine, okay? Keep talking. The people are listening.
All right. It's you and it's you and all 200,000 of our listeners.
Listen, I do these episodes every week with you, and I'm getting a kick and a half out of this thing.
All right, cool. Okay, cool. So they do Fuel, and then the new Unforgiven intro starts. And
which is rad.
It's super cool. I think I read that the tracks that they assembled for it are actually like throwaway tracks from when they actually recorded the Black Album.
Really? I haven't heard that.
So they didn't like re-record anything. They just sort of used like what was left around, because some of those leads are different and all that.
Well, Bob Rock, if you're listening, can you confirm this?
Bob, we'd love to have you on the show next week when we talk about Load. We'll get to the bottom of some of the stuff. So they have James's classical or acoustic setup. He comes out and plays it, which I thought for a stadium sounded really good.
It does sound really good.
They play the Unforgiven. It's nothing super remarkable. It was good. It kicked ass. For the solo, there's a few unfortunate things about the Snake Pit that I'll get to. One of them was, whenever the boys did go out on that catwalk, it's really hard to see anything, because they put all this lights on them, so they're awash in this light, so you can't see the stadium or anything. You just see their silhouette and light, which looks cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And Brad actually got some really bitchin' pictures of Kirk, but... So awesome. I basically watched Kirk's butt for the Unforgiven solo, you know?
Ooh.
Well, I wasn't like looking at his butt, but do tell.
Continue, please.
But he played it great, and it was like, you know, it meant a lot to see, because when I saw them, they didn't play The Unforgiven. So this for all those bitching about the diehards don't want to hear this stuff, I definitely wanted to hear The Unforgiven, because I've never seen them do it.
Yeah, that's awesome. They played it, obviously, at the show I went to as well, and I was beyond stoked.
They did Now That We're Dead next, which the whole... I don't really like the "if you want to live forever, first you have to die." I'm not crazy about that intro. I'm not really sure what he's talking about. Like, what's he talking about?
Personally, I honestly think that he's talking about the afterlife. I think he's talking about, or at least in like Christianity, I think he's talking about, you know, to live forever. You know, once you die, you live forever. In eternity, I think I have a feeling that's kind of what he's leaning towards. Only because over the years in his sobriety and going to rehab, I heard that he has found Jesus. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but he has tattoos about certain things that are biblical. So who knows?
It does just seem like kind of a more exclusive rather than a broad sentiment. Like for to yeah. re, you know, but
But you could also, but you know, you could also relate that to you know, anybody struggling with anything in life, whether it's a substance or a divorce or a death or something, you know, kind of that thing of, you know, surrendering everything, getting rid of everything that, you know, maybe negative in your life and kind of being reborn, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, so, I'm cool with it. I don't, even if it was, if he came out and said that's my religious moment, I wouldn't care. I'm on the ride.
No. I mean, it definitely sounds like he's into saying that. I mean, he even said it when they played Colbert.
Yeah, which, good grief. That's I didn't dig that either. Like, don't do the big crowd thing for TV.
He seems passionate about it, so whatever. You
that's
know.
Cool. And that's true. Like, I want James to feel good about what he's doing. He definitely seems passionate and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So they do Now That We're Dead. It's one of my favorite songs on the record. I'm glad I got to see the drum thing because it was fascinating. Yeah,
what'd you think? Because like I told you my experience with it and how I felt about it. I'm curious, now that you've seen it in person, how did you feel about it? Did you find it boring or interesting?
Yeah,
or?
It's not developed enough. I don't think it's cool enough. The drums are cool. The idea is cool. But the patterns they all work out, they need to up the ante on the rhythms or the, because it's kind of laggy and boring.
I agree. And I also think that, you know, it doesn't help that, you know, guys like Rob and Kirk aren't drummers, and you can tell if you're a drummer listening and you've seen the show or seen footage, even the way they're holding the sticks, they're like, their pinkies are out and they don't really know what they're doing as far as technique goes.
Right.
I'm not trying to diss them. I know they're having a great time up there and stuff like that, but I feel like if they are going to go into this big drum breakdown thing, they could definitely do it a lot better.
Well, after watching, can you hear my kid in the background, by the way? Is that loud?
I can totally hear your kid in the background. Is she singing?
She's singing Now That We're Dead, actually.
She is? Okay, cool.
After seeing them do this up front, I don't think Kirk likes doing it. I think he feels like, well, this is what we're doing and I'm on the team, but I don't think he feels very comfortable doing it. I think that's kind of obvious.
Yeah, it's definitely the point in the show where I think Lars feels like the band leader.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, though, he was doing that, like, you do this and you do that, but no one was looking at him. Like, yeah, James is clearly leading that drum part. So for them to pretend that Lars is doing it because he's the drummer doesn't come off.
I think at this point in the tour, they're like, hey, man, we spent a shitload of money on these drums that have, like, pads in them. And, like, they're basically, like, you know, like electronic drums.
And so we need to really do it.
Yeah, we have to do this. We just spent a lot of money on these custom-made drums, so let's just do it for the U.S. tour and maybe we'll get rid of it. Who knows?
Yeah, and again, to end on a positive note, I think it's cool that they're trying it. I think it's a really interesting thing for them to do. And the
drums, of course.
The drums look great. Like, it's a cool thing. I just think
they're gigantic.
It's a little underdeveloped, and I actually thought they sounded good too. But it is kind of underdeveloped. They need to.
It is.
They need to make that a real thing instead of just going bah.
Yeah.
Click, you know, like,
I think if I pull myself away from actually being a drummer and being somebody who tours, in general, I think the crowd is probably like, oh, this is cool. It's something different. It's not something we hear on the record. It's a little more unique.
Right.
So, if a fan, gets a cool experience out of it, then that's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, what I've been saying about the whole set list or the stock, like, bits that he does in between songs, James Hetfield has been touring professionally and successfully for almost his entire adult life. Those guys know what they're doing. So I defer to them. But I will say, just for me, like, when they did start playing Now That We're Dead again and kind of finished it up, I realized that during that whole middle thing, I had been, like, kind of disjointed and bored. And it wasn't until they started playing the song again that I was like, oh, okay, I'm back in.
Right, exactly. I was the same way.
So then they do Moth, and James made his same joke, which I think it's a funny joke, about his mic not working at the Grammys.
Yeah. He did that at your show?
Yeah.
I don't remember getting that one. What did he say?
He's been doing it every night. He taps the mic and goes, testing, testing. And he goes, well, at least you guys are going to get to hear the vocals this time.
He's been doing it. Okay, I have to go back and maybe watch some footage from the Philadelphia show and see if he did that. I don't recall it off the top of my head.
Is my kid singing like too loud? Do I need to like maybe tell her to?
maybe tell her to get on a mic and get involved in the podcast. And hey, girl, you know anything about Metallica?
Here's the deal about Moth. So we didn't get the cool dancing flame thing because the pyro had gotten too wet. So that was kind of a bummer. But they had really cool video of fire and stuff.
Yeah, the video's cool.
in Metallica's official like live Met Club release of the video from the show, me and Brad, there's a scene of me and Brad in the snake pit. It's pretty cool.
That's so awesome.
It's pretty cool to like be on one of those things.
Yeah, was that on the like on the actual website or on social?
Oh yeah,
okay.
We're in the Moth video and the Sabbath True video.
Yes,
pretty cool.
pretty cool. That's fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's neat. Oh, so
you guys are a slice of pizza in the fridge.
We're now part of the we're now part of the pizza factory.
I love it.
So I believe it was after Moth, James throws his first pick. All right, and he threw it. He was not throwing it to me. He just threw it into the snake pit. It's like the Matrix, slow motion, and the pick is spinning in the air. You know, picks are so unpredictable when you throw them because they catch the wind in a weird spot.
Of course, yeah.
Everyone reaches in the air to grab it. I reach and grab something. I keep my hand in a fist, and I bring it down. And everyone around me is like, oh, my God, dude, did you get it? And I was like, I don't know. I slowly open my hand, and there's James's pick. I'd caught it.
You got it?
I caught the first pick he threw out.
You haven't told me this.
I know. I'm saving it for the show, dude. I love this
dude,
show.
Dude,
I'm saving
you were like,
it.
You were like Charlie in the Chocolate Factory, like you were opening that chocolate bar, like, oh my God, I got it.
I got it, and I ended up giving it to Brad as a thank you for the snake pit
passes. Dude, that's really sweet of you.
Yeah.
I felt pretty good
about it because the snake pit was worth more to me, and he really wanted the pick, and it felt good. It felt like tit for tat, you know?
You know, I don't care what people say. I think you have a heart.
I don't care. No matter what my wife says, I care about things. So then we get the Rome tape. And I think me and Brad even said this during the Rome tape. You know, the... I said, you know what, dude? I'll take this song, man. I can't wait for them to start this song because it's such a great live song. I don't care that it's overplayed or whatever. They played it. It was great. Everyone in the whole stadium sang every word. It was a barn
Of course
burner.
They did.
It killed.
Yeah.
Then James comes out with a black snake bite, and I was like, oh boy. He starts playing this kind of Jamesy clean thing, and he walks way over to the mic, far stage left, and he does that new intro to Halo on Fire,
which is cool.
So cool. Yeah, he was a little pitchy during it, but it was really cool. Really cool. They play Halo on Fire, and the there's really great dual Kirk James guitar stuff on that song that was really fun to see live. And they did most of that like guitar mini stuff, they did right in front of the snake pit. So it was just so surreal watching James and Kirk, because they were like real close to us and then close to each other. That was one of the few moments I pulled my phone out because I was like, I got to get this.
Oh, rad. See, here's the thing, too, to our listeners. Clint hasn't sent me hardly anything from this show. It's driven me crazy because when I went to Philadelphia, like, the service is terrible, as you know, if you've gone to a show.
But you were better at
people.
Updating, for sure.
Well, you were giving me shit. You're like, dude, updates, what the hell? And I was like, shit, I got to send him something. And then once the show ended and the service was better for my phone, I start sending them a bunch of shit, little video clips, photos. I've literally gotten two photos from Clint, and one is like... two dudes standing in the pit by themselves, and the other one is Clint standing there with his hair soaking wet.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'll send them to you right after we get done doing this. I only took about 10, because the weather was so weird.
Yeah, I forgive you.
But that is one of the ones I got. So then, after Halo on Fire was the kind of Kill 'Em All slot, so we didn't know if we were going to get Kill 'Em All, Four Horsemen, Motor Breath, or Whiplash. And we got Whiplash, and it was awesome.
Oh, nice.
And there was a moment during Whiplash when I thought, like, this band is playing probably the top five fastest, heaviest thrash song of their entire catalog in a stadium to 50,000 people. Just to be
and
able
at one
to
point, they played it for like 20 people in a little club.
Yeah, and it worked. Like it was, you know, like the Black Album stuff. You know, is going to work because it's so broad and big and heavy and sludgy and slow. But it was so cool to see something as frenzied as Whiplash kill too. Now here's something really weird that everyone was scratching their heads in the pit is right after Whiplash, they did a teaser of Murder One. They kind of jammed on Murder One.
That's really cool.
And
they felt confident from the tuning room. They could like play this one riff or two, and
it almost looked impromptu because their faces all lit up. Like, and James turned around to look, the whole band kind of circled around Lars, just like they were in the tuning room. And they
should we do it? Should we do it?
Yeah. And they were like playing it, and the crowd was kind of confused. I didn't at the time. I was like, is this confusion or is this? I thought it might've been confusion instead of Murder One.
Right.
They did about 40 seconds of it and they were kind of laughing. And then that was it.
Then, still,
it was
a good
cool.
teaser.
Yeah, it was cool. And I've actually got a really cool story about Fade to Black. You know how you had a story about Fade to Black?
Right.
I have one too that you're going to like.
Ooh.
Nice. Have you already read about any of this? What happened during Fade to Black?
No, I have kind of kept away from this show only for this episode.
Cool. Okay. So then James comes back out with the camo snake bite, which
Is so badass. Is
mesmerizing. And he does the whole, you want heavy, Metallica gives you heavy, baby. Boom, Sabotru.
Yep.
Which everyone was going crazy. And he did this really cool feedback thing at the end of Sabotru where he like detuned the guitar.
Yeah. That's rad. He did that. I think he's doing that every night. He did that at the Philadelphia show as well, and it sounds fucking awesome.
The Venezuelan dude that had earlier been like, Lars is a piece of shit or whatever, when that happened, that dude was like, damn, what an ending, you know? Like, he, after 32 shows, was like, whoa.
Oh, that's cool.
Then they did One, which everyone who's been following this tour, like, the intro to One with all the pyro, they shoot firecrackers. It's amazing.
Firecrackers
or whatever, fireworks. They have sparklers and
they've got little M80s on stage, and they go pew pew pew.
They have those little pop rocks.
Yeah, they basically put pop rocks in 2 liter things of Coke and set them on stage. It's amazing.
They really had to cut the budget for the pyro this year, so that was all they could come up with.
Yeah, they get little poppers thrown firecrackers. On stage. It's pretty epic.
James is just like holding a Roman candle while playing with his right hand.
Right now, our buddy Matt, who's one of the pyro guys, is listening to this going, really? Firecrackers? Yeah.
Sorry, Matt. The pyro was amazing. The pyro was actually, to get back to the serious thing, was unbelievable. The song One sounded great. The machine gun part of One was definitely Sloppy Joe. It was definitely Sloppy Joe.
I think most Metallica fans know at this point. I mean, we love Lars, but I mean, as a drummer too, like that's not a super easy thing to play.
Yeah, I get
it. Now, if you're a crazy experienced metal drummer, you know, if you're a guy like Chris Adler from Lamb of God, you could probably play that no problem. It's tough, you know, and Lars usually kind of botches it, not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, but it's not always great. Most of the time, it's not great.
What he does is he kind of appropriates it, or like he does like a version of it. You know what I mean? Like it's like a shadow of it.
I think he's trying to do the actual version of it. And then he kind of, his feet just can't communicate with his brain maybe. I mean, the dude is also, you know, in his 50s and it might be kind of tough to do that. I don't know.
I will say, having said that about Lars and about One, throughout the whole show, he was a ton of fun. Like it was so cool to see, like he did those like arm pumps a lot. His tongue was out a lot. And
oh, you mean the hole in one thing?
Well, no, like the thing where he's like punching the air.
No, that's what I mean. Like, he kind of pulls his fist down. Like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
What golfers do when they make a great shot. You know?
Yeah, but he would do like five of them in a row with each arm. Like, yeah. You know. And but the cool thing about Lars was, because we were right on the front rail, is anytime all three of the other dudes were elsewhere, like down the catwalk or on the sides, he was engaging with us. So we had a lot of funny
engagement
with Lars, where we were all singing the lyrics together and all that stuff. So that was fun. After One, they wasted no time. They went into Puppets. Huge crowd pleaser, especially everyone in the pit. Everyone in the pit was really, really jazzed about Puppets. So then they leave and they play the Through the Never thing, which was cool. It was kind of weird, but it was cool. Whatever. I like Through the Never. I liked seeing a bit of that.
I will say that from my perspective, being so far back, I thought it was really cool and exciting and a good build up into the encore.
Well, now that comes to my second critique about the Snake Pit. We definitely did not get to really see the full-on show because we were so close. Like,
right.
like during One, they do these green lasers, and we could see them shooting out because they were shooting out from a place right in front of us, but we didn't get to really see those lasers.
I feel like when we go to Detroit, even though I haven't had the up-close experience, seeing the whole show and really taking in the full production from further back is something to see, man. Especially those gigantic video screens.
Well, see the two. So there are five screens, and the two on the very ends, we couldn't even really see them. So there's all, and then the pyro, like we could see the two in front of us, but we had to look almost straight up to see it. So
oh, yeah, for sure.
I'm looking forward to hanging maybe back around Big Mick like you did and kind of seeing the whole show.
Oh, I would do that again in a heartbeat. I mean, I would love to be up close, or maybe we can roam around like wherever we may roam.
Yeah.
Maybe hang for the first few songs back by Big Mick and then go around to the side.
But we'd be attracted. Like that, but we'd be attracted to the stage like a moth into the flame.
You aren't incorrect.
I'll have to eat up before though, so I can have some fuel.
Oh man!
All right, so check this out. So during that video, they set up over on stage right, not far stage right, like stadium stage right, but like stage right on the main stage, and they have James's acoustic guy, right? That's on a stand. He comes out and starts playing the intro to Fade to Black. Kirk walks up from stage left and starts playing the intro, but it's definitely out of tune. Like something's wrong, okay? That's all we know.
Really?
And James immediately looks up and he's like, it was so bad that he stopped, right? He stopped and he said, this is out. He said something's out of tune. And then then into the mic he goes, that was out of tune, right? And everyone just makes some reaction. Yeah. I was definitely like, something's out of tune. And I regret to admit that I immediately thought it was Kirk. So he starts playing it again. He goes, Kirk, give me an A. Kirk hits an A. This is just like they're in a garage. James hits an A.
Really? They're tuning to each other.
Yeah. James goes, give me an A. And Kirk swelled up an A chord, an A note. And James hits his, and James is I don't know what it was, but they were a half step off. And James goes,
a half step?
Yeah. And
that's a lot when you're playing live.
Yeah, James's acoustic guitar was tuned incorrectly. So his tech runs out, like the same tech that's in his rig rundown, like this tech I've seen a million videos of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Runs out and he's checking it, whatever, and like he like looks at it, and then you can see his tech say to James, it's fine, it's fine. He runs off and James goes, Kirk, hit a chord, and they both hit a chord, and it's clearly dissonant. And James is starting to look real pissed.
Really?
And he made a really good joke. I can't remember what the joke was. He made a really great joke that landed, and I thought, oh, cool. Like,
yeah.
He's the new James, you know? He's like the new Zen Buddha James, right? So they're like, there's like dead silence where I think he was waiting for them to maybe tune the guitar. And so he's like looking at Kirk, and then he starts playing the intro just on his acoustic, or on his electric, I mean, and he, as hard as he could, kicks over the acoustic on the stand.
He kicked it over?
He did like a, he kicked it hard, and it crashed to the ground.
Oh, man, his tech was probably like, oh,
fuck. No, I know, dude. He was mad.
So, okay, so when he played the intro on electric, was it in tune with Kirk at that point?
Yeah, but the thing is,
you know it was the acoustic.
It was the acoustic, but Kirk was definitely fine, and Kirk even had kind of an amused look on his face, like, haha, it wasn't me this time, you butthole.
It wasn't me this time.
But James is like, you know how people change his pedals for him, but his tone was still dirt, so he was waiting for them to turn it clean so he could just call an audible, but because he can't control his own effects, it was taking a minute, and I think that's why he kicked the guitar, because it just took so long to solve the problem. So
I mean, he did similar stuff on the Grammys with the Moth and the Flame vocal debacle.
Well, and it's just, he cares. He's like, he's a perfection. Well, let alone, it's a big mistake in front of a lot of people, but I actually don't even think that's what bothered him. I think what bothered him was his he wants a perfection in his craft. And
yeah, of course.
When something that's out of his control like that happens, it's, you know as well as I do that how frustrating that can be.
Totally. And I also know, like, from a tech standpoint, you think you did everything right and perfect, and all of a sudden it's not right, and you're confused as to why it's not right. Like, if that guy came up and said, oh yeah, everything's fine, he's been Hetfield's tech, I believe, since 03, 04.
Right, a while.
And, I mean, clearly there was some sort of maybe technical error, maybe, I don't know. I couldn't say, having not been there, but maybe there's a good chance that, he tuned the guitar, brought it out, and something was up with his tuner, and it was registering a half step off. I don't know.
Well, it looked to be one of those guitars that has a tuner on the side of it. Like when you look down, you can tune it on the guitar, and it tunes through the resonant frequencies of the wood. Because it looked like he turned a thing on the guitar, hit a note, and then he looked at James and nodded like it's fine.
Okay.
So I don't know what happened, but it was an interesting moment in the show, because it was to see him react that way was like, whoa. And then it was over. Like, then they were playing it and they were all smiles and everything was cool in the gang.
So when they continued on with the song, he just did it on electric?
Yeah, which honestly, man, I prefer. I think it sounds better.
I do too. I was about to say that I love all the old footage of them back in the day, and he's just playing that acoustic part on his Explorer.
And maybe he just thinks though they've already got it like a rig set up for Unforgiven. And it's like, it's just a different tone for the show. So maybe he's just thinking like, it's just a different palette, but it's just sounds better with the electric. That's the way they've done it since the beginning. They should just do it that way.
Right. Maybe they'll switch. They're playing Denver tonight, so maybe they'll switch it up.
Yeah. I'm interested to see what their choices are for all the interchangeable slots too. So they played Fade to Black and it was great. And Kirk's solo at the end was a blistering, awesome solo. It was great.
Right.
And he looked great. He played that Les Paul. Then they go to the front of the catwalk. The drums come up and they played Seek and Destroy.
Right, did the same thing, yeah. The electric drums.
Which was super fun. I thought the electric drums sounded totally fine from where I was.
Yeah, my only complaint about those were the way that the cymbals responded to Lars kind of doing like his cymbal swell and stuff.
Yeah.
It was a little V-drum sounding, a little electronic sounding. But overall, I think out of convenience, that's why they're doing it.
Well,
there's no reason to have that many more inputs in your console.
And right. It's a utility thing, and it mostly works. So I think that's how they see it.
And it's one song.
And this brings me to my third and final critique of the Snake Pit, which is that we basically heard the show through these kind of small 212 monitors. So when I walked to go to the bathroom while Volbeat was playing, I walked like in front of subs and then listened to like half a song when I came out of the bathroom in the GA. We were definitely hearing a different show.
Oh, you definitely were, yeah.
It's clean and good and solid, but there's not a lot of bass response and it's not as loud.
Well, everyone has to remember, I mean, you know, Big Mick is way behind you mixing this show for his ears. And even where I was standing, I was probably 20, 30 feet away from the tent Big Mick was in. At one point, our front of house guy for Kings of Leon dragged me. He's like, hey, man, come over here. Pulled me over right in front of Big Mick. And he goes, listen to that bass now. And I was like, oh, shit, it sounds even better. So I would encourage anybody who's not in the Snake Pit, who isn't hell-bent on getting up the rail, kind of hang out by the front of house tent where Big Mick is. You're going to get the best mix of the show.
Well, and I'm really glad that I got to do the Snake Pit thing, but I'm actually pretty stoked to see the Detroit show like with a full vantage point of the production value and for the sound.
You can see the whole show.
Yeah. So they do Seek and Destroy. It was great. It was a lot of fun. James did this cool speech about the family, like Metallica family. And he's like, you guys can even finish my sentences. When I say seek, you know, everyone's like, and destroy. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Did he mention, like, this is kind of our garage setup?
He did do that. Yeah. He did that.
That's cool.
And at one point, a tech had to come up, because he did this whole, like, this is like our garage, and a tech had to come up to do something with the drums. And James goes, hey, you weren't in our garage.
That's awesome.
I love his dad humor.
Oh, that's Papa Het for you.
Because he's dad humor city for sure. So
he totally is.
They kind of did their fake goodbye, the fake, like, we're definitely coming out for an encore in about 2.5 minutes. We said bye. The security girl in front of me, she was like, oh my God, I'm so glad it's over. And I said, well, there's three more songs. And she was like, what? She was like, I'm so tired. I'm so exhausted. I was like, well, they definitely have three more songs. So you need to figure it out. Figure out a way to deal with it.
You poor thing had to stand there the whole show.
You poor thing get a free ticket to Metallica literally right in front of James Hetfield. She looked she did what security people do. She just did the 10,000 yard stare towards the crowd for 2 hours.
Yeah.
They come out and we don't know if we're going to get Blackened, Fight Fire with Fire, or Battery. They played Battery. It was great.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
They did it with the intro tape. It was great. It was flawless actually. And Kirk was really excellent on Battery.
Yeah, Kirk, same thing in Philadelphia. Kirk nailed all those leads.
Then they do Nothing Else Matters. And this was, well, it's not odd, but I was surprised that James did the whole thing right in front of us. He did it on his actual center stage mic.
And, cool.
Eyes closed pretty much the whole time. And he ripped the solo. He ripped it, dude.
Ah, yes.
It was really, really good. And he was really into it. And then the song ended with, you know, he does that feedback thing at the end with his solo.
Yep.
He never sang or did the intro again. He just did this like long feedback thing, and he took he had a St. Louis pick, and so the chick that normally films Lars, you know, that girl like in the Met team that films Lars the whole time,
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She got right up on him on her knees and was filming James, like all this fog. And then he took the St. Louis pic and put it up in the camera. So that was all you could see on those big screens.
Yeah. He's been doing that, I think, at most shows.
It was so cool. And then from that...
Oh, it's great. It's just a little hat tip to the city.
It totally was. And then from that kneeling position, I don't know how he orchestrates this with his tech, because he went from straight on feedback world to intro to Sandman. And it sounded cool. Awesome. And everyone went crazy. Everyone loved it. Even all the diehards in the pit were hugging and high-fiving. And because it's that song is a representation of other things in the Metallica
universe.
It's
a great fucking song. And it's, I mean, come on. It's
a blast.
Oh, yeah. Especially towards the end, like, you know, in the part where it rings out and then he goes into the riff again and goes, boom.
Yeah.
And then the fucking pyro goes off. Yep. Oh, my God.
Yep. It was all that.
So good.
It was a great show ender. I mean, it was just great. And so I will say by the time this happened, we were pretty tired. Like, I was exhausted from a day of standing in the rain and traveling. And I was definitely very satisfied, very full, but also very, like, ready to say, you know, to say goodbye. Yeah. and say goodnight. So they did the thing where they came out. They did a really long goodbye, which was really sweet. They were throwing out tons of picks. We weren't able to get any of the picks they were throwing out, but Kirk was throwing out entire cups full of picks.
Oh, wow.
So they did a long goodbye. James did this whole speech about how grateful they were. They took a lot of time to try to fist bump or shake hands of a lot of fans.
Cool.
The vibes were very, very good, I thought. And that's kind of the show.
That's awesome, man.
That's it. That's what happened.
Yeah, that's great. Jeez. Well, I mean, you. I think you got as good experience as I did, but a lot of differences, especially your view from the Snake Pit.
Yeah.
To be that far from Hetfield, watching him do what he does and so passionately for a living.
It was powerful.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It had to have been a powerful experience.
Well, because he really is. I mean, I think we all knew this anyway, but he really believes it. You can tell on his face.
He really
believes it. So that's just a treat as a fan to see that all these years later, they're still not phoning it in.
Dude, that's great, man. And well, I'm beyond happy for you that you got to experience this, and obviously thank you to Brad for facilitating the Snake Pit.
Yeah, I do want to end it by just saying to Brad how grateful and thankful I am that he offered me that ticket. It was a very memorable, like, I'll never forget the show as long as I live, right? And I may never get to be that close to that band again. So I'm not exaggerating when I say it was like a Metallica dream coming true. So Brad, thank you. And another thing too is that he's such a cool dude that we're buds now. So I got a new friend out of
it. That's awesome. So I got to meet Brad in person. Maybe we can have him on the show at some point and talk about his experience with Clint.
I think we should. I know he would be down to do that. I know he would be down. He was very complimentary and cool about the show. So
that's awesome. And you posted one Instagram story about where you were on the rail, and then there was a quick little clip of Brad. He looked so happy to be there.
He was stoked. We both were. Yeah.
And now that we know that, like, it was Brad's first show, like, you can see that excitement on his face. And I know the feeling, because we've all been there if we've seen Metallica once.
One of the things that he really loved was, because like you, his favorite thing is Justice. That Justice is like the thing for him. And in the Memory Remains Museum, they have handwritten lyrics for every song from Justice.
Oh, that's so cool. Did he tell you all about it and stuff?
Oh, yeah. He's so sweet, dude. When he was actually in the museum while I was having a beer, he was like sending me all these pictures of the museum, and, you know, he knows that I love that snake bite guitar, and there's a snake bite in there. And
well, maybe we have Brad on for a segment to talk about his experience in the experience.
That would be a great episode. Yeah. Well, let's plan on doing that. And next week we've got Load.
We do. We have Load, which some of you might be kind of nervous about.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I feel great about it. I've been listening to that record a bunch this week.
Me too. It's a fun it's a fun little record, man.
It really is, man. I listened to it on a flight the other day. I don't remember where I was going because it's all a blur at this point. But
yeah, dude, you're lost out there for sure.
Yeah, totally. But I remember, like, listening. I got about halfway through the record and I started dozing off on the flight. Then I wake up and kind of be confused on what song I was on, because I was like, wait, I was just listening to this song and now it's, you know, that kind of in and out of sleep feeling. And but every time I kind of dozed off and woke up, I was like, oh, that's a really rad part. So I've been listening to it a bunch. I'm excited to do the episode. I wish I was in Nashville so we could have Paul on this episode and talk about, you know, track by track stuff.
I know, I do too. And I do feel like it's like one of the bigger ones we're going to do. I wish we could do it in person, but such is life.
Such is life, bro.
Well, you guys can reach out. So I think Lori Laker, our friend, is going to the Denver show tonight. Any of you have any experiences, the Worldwired experiences, email them to us at Metallica. Wait, what's our Metal Up Your Podcast at G? Wait, what is it?
Metal Up Your Podcast Show at gmail.com.
Jesus, I'm like super spacing over here. And don't forget to leave us that review. It really goes a long way. We made a lot of progress through the last week because you guys took some time to go do it. Just leave us
Thank you very much.
Even if you just write, I like this podcast, here is a positive review. It just really helps.
Yeah, totally.
And we're going to send you all the free crap for doing it. So take a moment to go do it. Do you have any parting words, Ethan?
The only thing I was going to say is I'm on tour in Europe and the UK for the next month until July 9th. Check out the Kings of Leon schedule. If I'm in a city near you and you see that maybe there's a day off or there's a day in between a show, I might be in your city. If you want to grab a beer and talk about Metallica, I'm so down.
Yeah, you guys go find Ethan. Go feed him some pizza and buy him some beer.
Come find me.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah, thank you so much. Again, I'll say this to you, Clint. I really appreciate you sharing your story with the show. I can't wait for us to do this together in Detroit.
We got Detroit coming up in a month.
It's going to be awesome.
All right, peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.